Because Jan switched to Geico and saved hundreds of dollars on car insurance, her savings account wants to take her to a fireworks show. But it can't. It's a savings account. It can't read where the next fireworks show is in the local paper. Switch to Geico, and every time you see extra money, you'll know your savings account wants to take you to a fireworks show. But remember, it can't. It doesn't know how to read. It is, however, happy that you're saving money.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Introducing a faster way to push to talk. AT&T Enhanced Push to Talk. AT&T delivers more of what your business needs. Instant communication, up to 1,000 contacts, plus a broad array of devices and platforms. Visit your local AT&T store or call 1-877-981-3359 to get your business started today. You pushed it talk. We pushed it further. AT&T. Rethink possible.
New activations only. Requires 2-year commitment to eligible voice and data plans plus activation of AT&T Enhanced Push to Talk service.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And
we got a party in the studio.
We do, but wait a minute. I am not cheap. I'm careful.
No, you're not. You're cheap.
You are my wife.
Cheap.
All right. So we got a lot to talk about. I just want to remind everybody, next Saturday, we are recording the show live. It is next Saturday, right?
No,
two Saturdays. Yeah. I don't know what Saturday.
I mean, you can tell them to go next Saturday.
Saturday the 23rd.
Nice.
I'm sorry, Saturday the 23rd at Early Mountain Vineyards out in Madison, Virginia. They're having their first annual oyster festival. Mm-hmm. We were out there last week. It is.
It's beautiful.
Oh, it's scary.
It's really a gorgeous facility.
It is owned by Steve and Jean Case, and let your imagination go wild. It's beautiful, fabulous. If you go to earlymountain.com, you can get tickets to join us, and it's almost sold out.
It is almost sold out. So it'll be a great
What
day.
A draw. All yeah. right. So we got a lot going on today. We got the three Yiddish cups in here with us.
Well, one's pretending to be a Yiddish cup, but he's not really.
It's a
Chubai and Jack. Oh, he's a Shagetz. Okay. We got Ellen and Todd Gray, whom you all know own Equinox and Muse in the Corcoran, along with David Hagedorn, who is in his day job as a food writer. A food writer and the Washington Post, but they've all collaborated together on
NTC
a book.
NTC Modern Luxury.
Oh, that. On a new book called The New Jewish Table, Modern Seasonal Recipes for Traditional Dishes, and we're going to be talking about their recipes and, you know.
Just in time for Passover. Right, chewing it up. We're totally chewing it up. We're just in time for Passover, so we'll be getting lots of good ideas for your Seder table. Did you also know that it is National Colon Cancer Awareness Month? Since we're going to be eating all this Jewish food, I think we should also be taking care of our colon as well.
If we had a different format, think of the jokes. All right.
Okay. We have registered dietitian Sarah Wainwright and Michael Sapienza, who's the founder and executive director of the Chris for Life Cancer Foundation. They're both in to talk about colon smart diets and about the big March 19th Eat for Life celebrity chef event. So we're going to get all the details on that later on in the show. Now, have you seen those guys on American Express throwing the salmon, that American Express commercial? They are the guys from Pike's Place Fish that's out in Seattle. It's a fabulous fish market, and they have a new book, and we are going to be talking with them on the phone today. We're going to give you a 411 on how to throw a salmon.
Yeah, we'll tell you how to throw your fish.
Right.
But don't take it for a walk.
Okay.
I have to say, I'll invoke my Greek heritage. There's baklava that your yaya makes, and then there's baklava from Baklava Couture. Katerina Georgalis is in with us today. She's the founder of Baklava Couture, and we're going to be talking about her artisan pastries, each of which is handcrafted in Greek olive oil, using Greek olive oil, and we want to ask about that because where's the butter?
Right.
But we're going to find out in a minute. And I have to say, when was the last time you had Balkan food or Balkan cocktails, or would you know it if you fell on it? Well, you will soon. because Ambar is now open on Barracks Row. It's a new Serbian restaurant brought to you by Ivan Irikanin. I want to say it right. Irikanin.
Did
I
do it?
Irikanin.
Oh, thank you. Andy, all right.
I had it right before. Sorry, Ivan. He's a partner of Richard Sandoval's, and they have several restaurants. And Ambar opened in January to rock and roll traffic and rave reviews. He's in with Milton Hernandez, who's his mixologist. Yes?
Beverage manager.
You want to be?
Beverage manager.
Oh, yes. Beverage manager and mixologist. All
okay.
Right. And
Ivan, come on up to the mic.
Yvonne,
I'm sorry, come up to the
Nikki
mic.
I did.
All
right.
Only after you, though.
Okay.
So let's just do a quick overview. I've had the pleasure of already being at Ambar and checking it out, and
it is gorgeous.
But Serbian restaurant, it's not something that DC is known for. What gave you the idea to open up a place like this?
Be Serbian.
I know that.
That's one of the biggest reasons. The other reason is, as well, what you mentioned, there's no other restaurant in the city.
Right.
And it's an opportunity to bring something new to the city. The culinary Washington, as we know today, is in need of something new like
so
that.
So what is Serbian cuisine?
Right, for people
is
who don't know.
Mediterranean-ish?
I would say that's a mixture. We have a big influence by Turkish. We're next to the Greece. We have Austria next to it. Its difference is from the part of the Serbia. Like if you go in the northern part of Serbia, we have a lot of influence by Hungary, and we have a lot of goulash and slow cooked food. Mm-hmm. In the east, we do a lot of barbecue. We have a lot. We also, being former Yugoslavia, we have a Adriatic Sea, and we also have a lot of dishes from Croatia or Montenegro.
You serve baklava?
You
better talk to Katarina. I heard turkey in there.
We're going to get some advices later today and put the baklava on the menu probably.
You realize you're not allowed to leave the room until that happens.
Well, so let me ask you a question. So at Ambar, are you encompassing all the different regions of Serbia on the menu? Or are you more north, more south?
We call it Balkan restaurant because former Yugoslavia, we all eat the same. We speak the same language. It's only the dialect is different. You can see a lot of dishes from Bosnia. You have Croatia. Mm-hmm. You have Serbia as well. In a bar program, we have all the wines that are from same region. You have Croatian wines, Serbian wines, Macedonian wines. And we're trying to kind of represent the whole that area, not just Serbia.
Okay.
Well, how many cocktails have rakia in them? Lots? Many?
Six of them. Six of eight.
Well, Milton, do you want to tell us what rakia is or... Yvonne,
no,
you
I can. Rakia is fermented fruit brandy, which is only find it in that area of Europe, and it's not very represented in the United States.
No, not at all.
I spent the last 10 months importing 20 different rakias from Serbia, from approving it with TTB label quality and bringing it in. And I would say we are the only place in the United States that carries them at this point.
And not to be confused with rakı, which they serve in Turkey, which is jet fuel in a glass.
It's more licorice. They have a lot of anise, and it's kind of sweeter. This is a plain fruit brandy.
Okay.
It's organic.
Is that what we're starting
additive.
With? What are we starting?
All right. Well, while Milton mixes up the first
ago.
Drink.
Okay.
All right.
Go
well,
ahead.
Make that noise. Let's move on and let's talk about our Jewish table with Todd and Ellen Gray and David Hagedorn.
Can I have my book back?
I got a question for you. With everything else you guys have going on, how did you find time to do a cookbook?
Well, that was a little interesting last year. It took 2 years, though. So, you know, it was sort of in the beginning of the...
2 years? Oh, yeah. My God.
It was the beginning of the storm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, were you...
Literally.
Here's the thing. Isn't grandma's brisket recipe good enough? Why did you have to mess with it is the question, you know?
Well, it's not that it wasn't... The traditional recipes aren't great recipes. We wanted to do something that was a little bit more... let's just say a little bit more modern, a little bit more seasonal, a little bit incorporating more fresh ingredients and sort of driving our
making
vision.
Because you haven't
done.
Lived till you've tasted Grandma Norma's brisket.
But let's back
He's
up.
He's making brisket relevant.
I think for people who don't know you both and know and David, don't know all your history, why don't you talk about how the concept of the book came to be? Because there's really two distinct voices in here. It's Ellen and her way of growing up and how food was important to her and her family. And then your way of growing up and how food entered your life and how her family's traditions of food came into yours. And I love the
story.
You
read the book.
I did read the book. I read. So I think for people who haven't had a chance to see it, it's really important to explain how you guys came up with that concept. And then, David, I assume you're the one, David Hagedorn, how you
carried it out.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Ellen, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I don't think we realized we had a story to tell until Joan Nathan told it originally in the New York Times a couple years ago. She did an article on when chefs marry Jewish women, because they were all men in the article, around the holiday times, what happens, you know, do the chefs come in and change recipes? And through the course of
I thought
you
meant do they change their minds.
Right. They're stuck. So through the course of this article, we realized what a good story we had to tell. And an agent actually approached us and talked about the concept of it. And we brought, obviously, David to the table to literally tell the story and eat the food and travel the journeys with us. So he helped us express our the stories that we had to tell about growing up. So definitely couldn't have done it without
David. Well, so David, as you were hearing sort of Todd's side and Ellen's side, how were you deciphering, like, what did you want to bring into the book about their stories?
Well, everyone has stories or their background, and that's great. And they were very conversant about those things. But the book had a certain profile that it needed to cover. Mm-hmm. And so I had to ask them questions in a way
that... Keep us on track.
Right. That would, you know, stay on subject and kind of... ask kind of provocative questions to probe a little deeper into their backgrounds and really match the stories with the food, but also give the information you need to give in the head note of a recipe, for instance, that is instructional at the same time.
Yeah, David getting Todd and I to sit down and focus on anyone.
I was going to say, herding cats.
Yeah, there was moments where he was like, all right, you guys.
You know, people hear Jewish cooking and they think, you know, who are not familiar with it, and they think, you know, it must be some sort of weird esoteric thing, but the first...
I don't think so. I think people think bagels, lox.
Yeah, but they don't think... My point is...
They don't think of it as cuisine.
It's cuisine. But, the first recipe I opened to when I opened up the book was corned beef hash with two fried eggs on it. And that's all mainstream stuff with a special twist. Talk about that recipe.
Well, you know, that... I mean, corned beef hash, you know...
He just looked at one recipe.
Right, exactly. Right. Well,
That's so evil.
Well, no, seriously. You know, it's like very many of the recipes in the book. I mean, I had really never probably eaten a bagel before I had actually gotten into college. And, you know, growing up in Virginia, it wasn't something that... corned beef hash wasn't something that we certainly were familiar with.
Call it corned beef hash, son.
That's right.
Exactly. Kind of hash.
Exactly.
That's right.
And so, you know, I had to take the lead from Ellen and her family to sort of, as I ate lots of corned beef hash, and I got some foundation. I said, you know what? This needs to have good local potatoes, good roasted bell peppers, needs to have good heirloom cabbage, and needs to have some good farm eggs on the top of it. And it takes this to a whole different level, which is what I tried to do. Hence, something like we've got here in the studio, the fig blintzes.
Which are delicious.
I didn't know what a blintz was until I married into her family.
Right.
So I was like, those things are kind of, you know, what are those things
the
coming out of a frozen box?
I thought that's what I grew up with.
Wasn't that when
filling,
the Germans attacked London? The blintz?
So, this is like a fresh crepe batter. You take a blintz recipe, the foundation of a blintz, and we incorporated local figs and port wine, and you make a nice crepe batter. You saute them, serve them with a little powdered sugar. It takes a blintz to a whole new level. Like the corned beef hash, or like the sweet potato latke.
Well, actually, what I thought was really interesting when you wrote about making blintzes, I mean, you talked about how you ate them frozen out of the box, but the fact that you realized that so many other
cultures
have a blintz, it's just
called something else.
It's
like a pierogi.
Stuffed crepe.
A pierogi is a kreplach. It's a whatever. They're all the same thing.
There's a lot of food that's rolled up.
It's tortellini. You know, it's the same thing.
Absolutely. And I think that's what's exciting about the book, because I think that everybody relates to this in their family history, and they can sort of see things throughout the book that they might have at one time in their life experienced and maybe in a different culture. But I think it brings an awful lot of different experiences to the book and to life.
Well, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, you guys put together menus for the holiday, which I love, because I think we all have our traditional tables that we set every year, but it's kind of nice to shake it up once in a while. So I want to talk about how you picked recipes for that, because when I saw Hamantaschen on Passover, I was like, no, wrong holiday. It doesn't make sense. So this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're still talking Jewish cooking. We'll be back in just a sec.
Dreaming of taking the next train out of town? We've got the ticket. Join FCA Bethesda in supporting the Children's Inn at NIH, a home away from home for critically ill children. Raffle tickets are on sale now for trips to London and Barcelona. $100 buys you an opportunity for the trip of a lifetime while helping to support the Inn. Winning tickets will be drawn March 23rd at the 15th annual FCA Bethesda Children's Inn Gala. Winners need not be present to win. To claim your ticket, visit childrensinngala.org.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does 3 decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis and our guests Todd and Ellen Gray and David Hagedorn. They've all come out with a new cookbook called The New Jewish Table. And
okay, so
we're talking recipes now.
We were talking recipes, Passover's coming up in just a couple of weeks, so... You had Hamantaschen, which is traditionally for Purim, but you have a Passover version. I mean, how did you come up with a recipe for that? It's not easy.
Well, in the book, it talks about substitution for using almonds and doing ground almonds and really using almond flour in place of all-purpose flour. So the recipe has a dried apricot and walnut, and it's this traditional style of the cookie, but with a substitution of almonds instead of flour, ground almond into a powder, into a flour, if you will. So that's really, and of course, I took a lot of guidance from obviously Ellen and her family, and because growing up, I wrote Passover menus all the time in Fredericksburg.
Right, I'm sure, absolutely. And working with Roberta Donna, you did a Passover Seder every year.
I do those in my sleep,
Right.
Am I supposed to put with the crepe lock? Hey. Right.
But so, in working with Ellen's family, were you just? Did you just want to join in with their food traditions? I mean, what was it?
Or did they make you?
Right.
No, listen. Anybody that knows the Kassoff and Iris family knows what an unbelievable family unit they are. And just getting the opportunity to be with them and learn in weekends and eatings and delis and going to New York with her father and going through delis and being in and around that whole New York circuit, it was a learning experience. And obviously, I think it comes through in the book and it has a little bit of my Virginia influences
and awe.
Yeah, right. Exactly, and then a little of the Equinox infusion into it. So I really think it's a good blend.
Mm-hmm. And David, as you were doing the recipes, I mean, did you cook them all and play with them, or how did you translate what Todd was doing?
Well, I didn't develop the recipes, but we worked with many of the recipes when we got together, mostly on Sundays, and for instance, we would talk about eggs and putting poached eggs on the corned beef hash, and I said, and how do you poach an egg? You know, because every chef poaches an egg differently, so he'd start explaining it to me, and I'd say, let's go poach an egg, and because everything has to be translated into the language of a cookbook.
Most of the time he was right, and I was slightly wrong.
It's kind of like marriage.
You were right just then.
All right. Well, that's one for one. All right, so quickly, where are you guys booked?
signings, book events.
Tomorrow night we'll be at Six and I Historic Temple. The book will be available there. We're going to do a talk. And at Politics and Prose, local bookstores, and online, of course, at Amazon.com, you can get the book. And you can also get it at the restaurant, and Todd will feed you some hamantaschen and sign your book there at the bar.
Fabulous.
Maybe with some kosher wine.
I better get them ready.
You better make some. I'm coming down. All right, the new
stands on 16th.
The Human Way. All right, that's A New Jewish Table by Todd and Ellen Gray with David Hagedorn. Guys, thanks for coming in.
And thank you for the delicious big crepes.
Okay, let's go back to Yvonne. Itachanin. Yeah,
better.
Itachanin.
Okay, so Milton, what did you make over there?
So
you have to stand in front of the mic.
It's called a Belgrade Mule.
Mm-hmm.
And basically it's like the, it's a twist on the Moscow Mule, but it has, the twist on it is basically it's used plum brandy.
Mm-hmm.
So plum rakia, same recipe.
Okay. And so now did you guys work together to work with a chef to make cocktails that would go well with the food? Or are you just trying to show off the kinds of liquors that are available in the Balkan region?
The first idea was just to translate the rakia into cocktails, because in Serbia we have a lot of rakias, but the cocktails are not presented that much. Like, it's not a culture like in
the United
States.
Do you drink it straight up? I mean,
drink it straight up. And I wanted to kind of, I knew that I need to do something to rakia because it's very strong liquor, and then people here, to get used to it, it needs to be in a cocktail version.
Mm-hmm.
We created the four or five cocktails on our own, and then we have four or five cocktails that we use our classics, and we just exchange like rye whiskey for rakia and try to find a similar taste and match it.
Mm-hmm. And so when you were doing that, as you were making these cocktails, do you feel that it complements your food, or do you like the idea of like a cocktail first and then trying some of the wines to go with the food?
I would recommend to start with a cocktail, and then all the wines are very much pairable with food.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have a guy who can recommend it at the spot. And I think that starting with rakia on their own neat or with cocktail, and then pairing our wines with food.
All right.
Would be my recommendation.
While Milton's mixing up the next drink, we're going to talk about National Colon Cancer Awareness Month. If you didn't know that March is that, it is. And I think it's a scary subject sometimes that make lots of people uneasy. But there's a lot you should know and can do to stay healthy and avoid it. And that's why registered dietitian Sarah Wainwright and Michael Sapienza, who's the founder and executive director of the CRISPR Life Cancer Foundation, we're going to talk about colon smart diets and a big March 19th Eat for Life celebrity chef event and the Love Your Butt bus back campaigns you've been seeing around town that I saw, liked, and didn't know were yours. I'm very jealous. You should have come to me.
All right. Well, Michael, let's start with you.
Absolutely.
CRISPR Life.
Yeah.
How did it start? How did you start it? What is it?
I was actually a professional trumpet player, so it had nothing to do with colon cancer. Lived and worked all over the world, actually, most recently in Miami Beach, Florida. And my mom was actually diagnosed with colon cancer when she was 56. And she passed away in 2009 from colon cancer. And that was really the crux of me founding this organization and starting it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what did you want from the organization? What were you hoping to accomplish?
So most of us have probably heard Pink, right? We've seen Pink everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful, amazing what strides we've been able to make. But most people don't talk about colon cancer. David and I were talking about this before the show, you know.
Most people except us, yeah.
Right, except for us. You know, they don't talk about their butt. They don't talk about that area of their body. And
some people talk about butts an awful lot.
Yeah. Well, we want them to talk about it more.
When I get up in the morning and say, you've got a nice butt, we're not talking about any of this stuff. So, but, I mean, it's a point because it's, you know, I was telling you, I've had colonoscopies. It's not unpleasant at all. They knock you out with propofol.
Yeah.
Which is what knocked Michael Jackson out permanently.
Yeah.
But if they do it right, they knock you out, you're done, you wake up, and everything's, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am,
yeah,
it's done.
It's a 90% preventable disease.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you get screened, so at age 50, if you're African-American, age 45, or if you have a family history at age 40,
mm-hmm.
if everybody in this country got screened, basically we would prevent this disease from happening in the first place.
Okay.
So,
I'm only going to add my own one piece here.
You already added a piece.
If they go in early, they find what are called precancerous growths. That if you, that, you know, if you don't know polyps, if you don't know they're in there, they become cancer and right. it'll kill you.
Right.
And if you find them early enough, they're gone and you move on.
Yes.
But do you feel that there is a way, aside from getting checked regularly, is there more that we can do to protect ourselves from it? I mean, that's why we have Sarah here, I
yeah,
assume,
absolutely.
Right?
I'll let Sarah speak to that. Yeah.
Yeah, great. So I am a registered dietitian, and I started my company Why Food Works because I think that when you know why you're eating certain things or doing certain things, it's easier to stick to. Mm-hmm. And so specific to colon cancer awareness, first of all, there's a couple of spices, turmeric and garlic mm-hmm. are linked, associated with reduced incidence of colon cancer.
Interesting.
And those are very common spices. You know, turmeric is a main ingredient in curry, mm-hmm. and garlic is very prominent in a lot of different cultures' cookings. So, again, those aren't, you know, like a magic bullet, but that's definitely something you can incorporate more of pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And then fiber. So I want to talk about fiber. I have a little visual here, which I think Nikki's going to have up on the website.
Yep.
So I brought in basically a bunch of different foods, and I think the problem with fiber is that people don't really know what it does, A, why you eat it,
mm-hmm.
And B, they don't really know how much they're eating or what it's in. So first of all, fiber is only found in plant foods. It's not in dairy products. It's not in meat. It's only in plant foods. And so what I did was, and what you'll be able to see on the website, is that I have a bunch of different foods, and they're all in portion sizes that are roughly 3 to 4 grams of fiber.
Okay.
So we have just a quarter cup of black beans, mm-hmm. has about 3 to 4 grams. We have a palmful of almonds, some quinoa, 2 ounces of quinoa, about half a cup of cooked whole wheat pasta. And this mm-hmm. is where the differentiation of the quality of the ingredients comes in. Because
sure.
if you buy the whole grains, obviously, there's going to be more fiber.
Mm-hmm.
An apple, an orange, half an avocado has about 3 to 4 grams. And dried plums, which are also known as prunes, which aren't as, you know, people I think get really weirded out by prunes, so I call them dried
delicious.
Plums.
And yeah, I love them.
Some plums of my best friends are prunes.
I so. Actually have every morning. I make quinoa with dried plums.
So
for
you're
breakfast.
Yeah,
that's
you're probably getting a great amount of fiber from that.
I take good care of myself.
That's Sarah by Nikki and Nikki's butt. Thank you very much.
Well, and what that fiber is actually doing is a couple of different things. So it's basically going through your intestines and sort of sweeping them because it's not absorbable, right? Mm-hmm. Fiber is one of those few things that we're getting the benefit because our body isn't taking it up, absorbing it.
And it sort of takes things with it, right?
It takes things with it. It takes cholesterol with it. It takes a little bit of the healthy and unhealthy bacteria out with it. So that keeps those cycles sort of...
I feel like we should have like one of those little cartoons right now, you know, showing the fiber.
You know what? I'm willing to demonstrate. Just get your phone and...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's... I think an animation would be great.
Right.
Animation?
Talk video. And so the other thing is that your intestine, people don't think much about this, but it's a muscle. It's actually a muscle. So when mm-hmm. you're eating fiber, which your body can't absorb, it has to physically work harder. And we know that when you work a muscle, its tone is improved, its quality is improved. And so I think when you're focusing on these positive attributes, it's just easier and more fun to eat the right things, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So now
you
brought chicken and
what? We're going to run out of time.
No, we don't.
We want to talk
minutes.
About Eat for Life.
I know. We're not coming back to them.
For a couple...
Let's just talk about quickly the chicken and the pork.
Okay. So we know that red meat is associated with increased incidence of colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that it causes colon cancer. It means that portion size is really important.
Okay.
So instead of telling people to avoid red meat, I just say that that's a special food that you should regard as eating less of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought these two. I brought a pork fillet and a boneless, skinless chicken breast just because I want, maybe you can you give me an estimate on what you think ounce-wise the sizes of
They're
these?
They're 8 ounces each.
Okay. So the pork is actually 8 ounces and mm-hmm. the chicken is 10.
Okay.
We wouldn't, so you are really good at that, actually.
Right.
Most Americans look at this and be like, well, I have no idea.
Okay.
Can I guess? I'd say 8 and 10.
Okay.
Just
right
a wild,
on.
Crazy guess.
Oh my gosh.
That is how I live my life. Just like that.
So the point here is that both of those should probably be cut in half. And those would be then more responsible sort of portion sizes. So
okay.
What?
Right.
It's not enough.
Food.
Well, you're filling then the rest of your plate with the beans and the quinoa
veggies.
And the veggies.
Okay.
And if you're still hungry, you know, drink a glass of water and drink some, eat some more vegetables and
Oh my God.
You know, see how you're feeling.
You should have married my wife. You're both a pain in the butt.
And all right. How much healthier are you for that? You
know? Look at me. I'm still alive. I'm 98 years old. Look at me. Hey, yo.
All right. We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, Michael, we really want to hear about all the events you have going on with Chris for Life, because I know you're doing a bunch of things.
Absolutely.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're talking about your butt. We'll be right back.
Talking about your butt.
For those of you who like to check your connection speed, you can go to broadbandreports.com. You can get their speed test. You can test your upload and download speed. I like to do that periodically. Sometimes my Fios download speed gets up to 16 megabits per second, but this morning I had 10 down and 3 up. And you've got 60 megabits per second. I'd love to have that kind of bandwidth, but 60 could be overkill. But I'd say anything more than 30 is probably not worth the money.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10. On 1500 AM.
Union Market is the new year-round food market with over 40 vendors. It's DC's new spot for local taste and style. Union Market is composed of the finest food artisans, all creating a unique culinary experience. Check out their $7 lunch specials and primetime libations, Union Market's Thursday and Friday happy hours. Union Market is on 5th Street Northeast, just off Florida Avenue, with lots of free parking. Also get there on Metro's Red Line to Noma Gallaudet. Union Market's open Wednesdays through Sundays. For hours or info, visit unionmarketdc.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us. Today, visit redcross.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking about some great events coming up sponsored by Chris for Life. So, Michael, hit it.
Yeah, absolutely. Next Tuesday, March 19th at Cryos, which is on P Street, we have an event called Eat for Life with Chef Rock Harper and the chef from The Source as well. We'll be
Scott Trudeau.
Scott Trudeau, thank you. And we'll actually be having a chef competition. Incorporating colon-friendly foods.
How is Scott going to beat The Rock?
That's a good question. Yeah. So you'll have to be there to find out.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then also on March 24th, which is two weeks from today, actually, we have our big Scope It Out 5K, which is right on Freedom Plaza.
I like that. Scope It Out. Very cute.
Well, and you got your Love Your Butt campaign.
We got Love Your Butt campaign, yes, sir.
All right, let's just remind everybody, this is Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and if you're not aware, you better get aware, because ignoring it ain't going to help you.
No. Have it checked, absolutely.
All right, well, thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you.
That was really terrific, very interesting. All right, Milton, we have somebody on the phone that we have to talk to, but just tell us about the next drink you poured so we know.
Right,
and how good is it for our colon? Because I think that's important.
All right. The next drink that I'm making is basically make with pear puree, which I mix it up with sour anise and cinnamon, and it has pear rakia and a little bit of simple syrup and lemon juice. That's about it.
Excellent. It sounds delicious. All right, pass that around, and let's get our caller on the phone.
Anders, are you on the phone?
I'm here.
Hi.
Good morning, Anders.
So go deep. I'm throwing a flounder right now. I hope you can catch it.
All right, I'm going long.
All right, so Anders Miller is one of the Pike Place
fish guys,
and we know you from the commercial, and we know you from your new cookbook, which is called In the Kitchen with the Pike Place Fish Guys. Clever title. And welcome to Foodie and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Excellent.
All right. So, there are lots of things to talk about.
Can you give us just a quick history of the market? You guys are out in Seattle, but you've been there for a really long time.
Yeah, we've been there. The current owner, Johnny, has owned the fish market since 1965, actually. And great guy to work for. He's really the guy that, he's the source. He creates the space for us to be able to be down there having a good time with everybody. you know, we're known for throwing the fish, but it's really about more than
It's a little bit more than that. You're known for selling really terrific fish as well.
One of the things that's interesting, I saw it in the book, is that this is the oldest operating fish market in the country. I mean, the operating farmer's market in the country, right?
Yeah, it's amazing, you know, and I just feel fortunate that I get to be down there every day and, you know, buy my vegetables down there and shop one day at a time. It's just a magical place.
Well, so let me ask you, given that the fish market has been there for so long, you guys just recently went sustainable in all the fishes that you are now selling. Sustainable is a huge buzzword right now in the food community, especially for the last like 5 to 10 years. So what took you guys on that road to now change the kind of fish that you're selling at the market?
Really, we were upsetting people with some of the stuff we were selling was kind of the catalyst for it. We used to sell wild steelhead, mm-hmm. which it's legal to buy it from the natives in Washington State. But besides getting it from the natives, it's kind of a controversial fish. You know, the populations aren't doing too well. So we started getting a ton of emails every day from these sport fishermen, and they were really upset that we would even sell steelhead. So, you know, our vision for our company is peace and prosperity for all. And you know, you take a look at these emails, and you're like, I'm not really creating peace over there with that guy.
Right.
So we, you know, I printed off a bunch of those, took them to our work meeting, and we started having this conversation about, do we really need to sell steelhead if we're creating this upset out there? And it just kind of, you know, just kind of opened up a bigger conversation about what we're up to in the world and our vision of peace and prosperity and how that ties into what we sell. And so,
well, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, given the kind of fish you sell, I mean, you're already educating the public. I'm sure, you know, the book is a perfect example. I mean, you guys are experts in your field. So people ask, well, what do I do with this? And how do I cook it? And how does it happen? So now do you feel that you're able to educate even further about, no, this fish is good because this is how it's caught, or this is why we're not serving farmed, you know, farmed this? Or do you feel like you're really giving more information to the public?
Yeah, and it's really exciting for us, too, you know, because there's some people that might never get to come to our shop and interact with us one-on-one and get educated that way. So, you know, you could be in middle America, you could buy this book, and you could start reading it and go, oh, man, I didn't even know anything about sustainability, and mm-hmm. I actually have a decision in things, you know. So the choices you make really do matter. So we're really excited about that. We're really excited about the recipes, too. We tested them all out, collected them from all over. It's just been we've been working on it for like 4 years, so we're very proud of them.
Well, let's talk about those, because I saw in there that you took recipes from customers and from restaurants that you dealt with.
And it's a beautiful book.
How did you decide what to keep and what to chuck?
I'm sorry?
Well, how did you decide, you know, sort of make Solomon's choice there on recipes that made it into the book and recipes that didn't?
You know, lots of eating. every Monday.
That sounds really tough.
You're breaking my heart.
Yeah, I know. Some people have real problems, right? No, every Monday I would get together with Brian and Leslie, and we just would test out recipes, and it would be like, okay, we're doing breakfast this day, and we would, you know, you'd just eat eggs until you couldn't eat any more eggs. And we would just, you know, we'd test them out, we'd tweak them, and then we would just kind of break them down like that. So we had to break a few hearts here and there.
I bet. And did you guys all, like, debate with each other? No, this one needs to go in there, this one. Like, what was your favorite? What was one that you really fought for that you felt like needed to be in there?
Well, we've got Dickie's crab dip. Dickie mm-hmm. is, he's been the boss. He recently retired, but he's worked at Pike Place Fish. He's actually the owner's younger brother. Mm-hmm. He's worked there for about 30 years. And every event, 4th of July, any get-together that anybody goes to, they always make Dickie's crab dip, you know, and it's a very simple recipe, mm-hmm. And so it almost got axed at one point, and I was like, nope, Dickie's crab dip. I mean, that's just classic of a fish market recipe as it ever, you know, as you could ever have. So we dolled it up a little bit, and instead of using a can of cream of celery like Dickie does, we kind of broke that down and made it from scratch.
Okay.
All right. Well, we only have a couple of minutes, and we've got to ask. I've tried several times. I'm throwing out of the strike zone when I try and throw a halibut, but I'm trying to throw it at my wife and not to her, and that could be the problem. What's the proper way to toss?
It hurts when it's not thrown correctly.
To toss a halibut, because I do it for the halibut. Thank you.
Proper way, bend the knees, back straight, no injuries. You know, it's all about the front hand and kind of whipping it with the front hand. The back hand's just kind of a guide, so you want to, when you follow through, You want your backhand guided right where you're trying to.
All right, now this is going to sound.
In this case, would be at your wife.
Well, do you ever put a speed gun on it to see how fast you're actually pitching the halibut?
It's been a few years since I've done that.
Okay.
My shoulder's starting to break down a little bit.
Oh, well, you need Tommy John surgery or something.
Yeah, I think so. And then I got a good 10 years left in me after that.
All right. Well, listen, we really appreciate you calling in today. What? Do you have another question?
I got one more quick question.
Ask your question.
There are lots of articles in the Post and other papers about the fact that the oceans are going to be fished out by 2040 out in there. You guys sell about 1.5 million pounds of fish annually. You've gone sustainable.
But that's the point. They've
how much of the rest of the world has to go sustainable before we can really protect the oceans? That's the question. They need a lot of other guys to do that.
Yeah, we do. You know, a lot of people need to start thinking about that. And, you know, it's a slow process, but I feel like people are starting to open up their eyes. It's definitely headed that way. So, hopefully this book will help.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. And we just want to say, are you traveling around doing book signings and things of that nature?
Yeah, we are. I'm in New York right now. We're doing the Today Show tomorrow, and we'll be
Today Show. You're not Foodie and the Beast, man.
Yeah.
Are you coming to Washington?
Not coming to Washington this time. Only via telephone.
Oh my God! I'm standing here with a salmon waiting to chuck it to you.
Okay.
Rats.
Come on over.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, you guys. Everybody can find In the Kitchen with what?
The Today Show.
Okay, In the Kitchen with the Pike Place Fish Guys on bookstands everywhere. Andres, thanks so much.
Have a great day, guys.
You
bye.
Too. All right, bye.
All right, Yvonne, why don't you step up to the mic? All right, what did we just drink here? We have all these drinks. What do we got, Milton?
The one I'm confused. It's a Scorpio.
Mm-hmm.
This one?
And that's the one, that's the one with the pear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a
it's
fresh
delicious.
Meat,
like,
oh, that is, that's
it's
great.
Fresh mm-hmm. pear. Blend it down with star anise and cinnamon.
It's
that's
really
a brunch
yummy.
Drink.
It is
yes,
a brunch drink.
It's a brunch
it's
drink. It has
drink.
A little bit of simple syrup.
Yeah, because you can drink this and not fall over. Like
oh,
the
of
other
course.
So, Yvonne, wait. Go stand by the mic first. Tell us a little bit, because we've talked about the food concept, but we haven't talked about any specific dishes that you're serving. So talk about the menu at dinner and in the evenings.
The menu, what we did, we're presenting modern Balkan cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
What we did, we took the old traditional dishes, like Todd was talking before, and we put a little twist on it with the help of young, very talented chefs from Serbia that had experience working in London, Italy, mm-hmm. and learned all this new style of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
But we still managed to preserve the taste, which is very important. Like, also, I would say 30% of the menu is very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people said, if something works, why change it?
So what's traditional?
Right. Like, give us an example for those who
don't
know.
Let's say sarma, which is stuffed cabbage.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pickled cabbage. It's stuffed with rice and mixed ground beef and pork.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cooked, slow cooked for like 5 hours with smoked ribs and anything that it brings extracts flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's delicious. And it's, I would say, very simple to make, but you can't find it anywhere else. It's very specific to our cuisine.
To your region. Okay, great. All right. Well, Katarina, you want to come over and join
so,
us?
So, yeah, now we're going to switch to baklava, but
right.
We'll be back to you.
We're staying in the same general
you've
vicinity.
You've got a new baklava resource here.
Can I bring some
You can bring it in the question.
I'm very excited.
No, I need you to sit.
Yeah, we're gonna bring you up to the microphone. All right, so Katarina Georgialis is the founder of Baklava Couture, and we should start from the start because,
yeah, why baklava?
Well, what is baklava?
Okay,
let's really start there.
So you want to go that far back?
Yes.
Yeah.
Baklava is a pastry known all over the Eastern Mediterranean. It's got different variations. Whichever region it is. I won't get into the politics of where it started.
Okay. Why is that a big deal?
Oh, yeah. The Turks, the Greeks, everybody
okay.
wants a piece
so,
of baklava.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, based on, if it was from Turkey, it would have, a certain types of local nuts, pistachios, that sort of thing. I grew up on a Greek variety
mm-hmm.
with walnuts, cinnamon, layered with phyllo dough.
Mm-hmm.
So just, just depending on the region,
right.
The flavors do change. And there
okay.
are a sort of a series of traditional baklavas.
But so what got you interested in making it?
You know, I always say, I don't know. I grew up not really liking it.
Okay.
It was always way too sweet.
Yeah, it can be very, very sweet.
Yeah. But what I did like was more the homemade varieties, obviously, than the sort of butter laid in and heavily syruped pans of it that you usually get when you go out to restaurants and,
mm-hmm.
and other, just even prepackaged, I guess, baklava. And I just, a few years ago, I had the opportunity to sit down and play around with the idea. My dad actually started dabbling with it.
Okay.
And
he's a baklava dabbler? Do the police know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, my mom was always the one that made it in the house, but my dad started making it, and I was just like, come on, you got to do something different with it. It's just the same old stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just started playing around with whatever was growing in my garden that year. I had, okay. I started doing like rosemary-infused syrups, lavender, and just some other just herbs. And then over the time, I just started adding different spices, chocolates, espresso. Recently, I actually paired up with a local charcuterie artisan and did a guanciale baklava. So it was a sweet salty.
Oh my God, that
really
sounds
nice.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I hope there's some of that in that box over
there. We have to take a commercial break, but when we come back, I want to talk about how you add these different flavors to baklava for, you know, just
and
what
we're
the process
taste some and we will commercial taste some break.
Of course, of course, of course. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. You can join Foodie and the Beast this Saturday, March 23rd at Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. It's their first annual Oyster Festival, and there's going to be a live taping of our show, Foodie and the Beast. Take the quick drive to the Blue Ridge for great taste and fun from Early Mountain Vineyards, Chatham Wines, and Eastern Shore Event and Rentals. Of course, there'll be lots of oysters, cheddars, and clams, live music, and lots more. Tickets start at $55. Please visit earlymountain.com.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon Family Groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you could learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
What's going on? June 8th, I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis.
And baklava.
And Katerina Georgialis from Baklava Couture is stuffing our faces with all. I had no idea there were so many different
kinds. I know,
kinds.
But this doesn't look like baklava. This doesn't look like baklava at all.
Well, what I just tasted. Like
what am
baklava.
I eating? What is this? It's so good.
The one that you're having is walnuts with dark cocoa, just straight dark cocoa, and a little bit of cayenne pepper.
I love that. I like spicy. I like spicy with my desserts.
Yeah. And it's not too hot. It just gets that little kick.
It's delicious.
Very good.
Yummy.
So did you taste something like this before, or were you just playing?
No, I was just playing. I had the pleasure, I like to call it, of actually getting laid off of my previous career job.
Sometimes Congratulations.
Sometimes that points you in the right direction.
Yeah, it did. And it actually just pointed me in the direction of I just love being in the kitchen. And so I really started... Is it too spicy?
You're such awesome. What a baby. Give me
we'll
a break.
We'll throw some halibut at him later. Yeah, I just started playing around. I mean, one thing kind of led to the next. It was just sort of, you know, the syrups. And then I said, let me play around with different nuts. Why does it always have to be walnuts or this or that, you know? And I just, over the past 2 years, I just kept sort of layering it up, if you will, and just really kind of figuring out. I'm really bad at reading directions. So I just kind of like tried to figure out, you know, what textures do I want.
It's following.
Following. Thank you.
And I understand that. And I do get that.
I got to ask a question. Do you just do catering, or do you have a brick and mortar?
Not yet.
Man.
We are really looking towards something like that.
You need to partner with somebody.
Right. Yeah, so how do you find how are you getting the product out there? I mean, how are you letting people know?
Yeah, right now, this is going to be our second year with Fresh Farm Markets.
Okay.
And so we're doing a few locations. We've downtown Silver Spring, by the White House. And the new one, the new location for us will be Foggy Bottom this year. We're also going to be in a Bethesda Farmers Market with Central Farm Market.
Oh, you are going to do that?
Yeah.
They're terrific.
Yep.
We do a lot of work with them. I mean,
shout
we love
out
Fresh
to
Farm
Mitch Berliner.
Too. Yeah, I mean, we like both of them. They're both great organizations.
Yeah, I mean, we're really excited. This is actually going to be the first year that I'm just full force, baklava, couture only, and just, really focusing on just growing the business, expanding it, taking it places. But to answer your question about the catering, I do special orders online. Everything's made from, made to order. So recently added
shipping.
Yeah, just this past year we started shipping and just, all over the U.S.
But now you're making your own syrups too?
I'm making my own syrup from scratch. Yeah.
Okay, and you're selling them. So what did you bring
actually,
in?
I missed that part. The syrup that I make is actually, it's based off of a family recipe, but I do use local honey, which I'm stuck with it. I can't find another honey that works better.
Okay.
So, and I feel like that's just such the key ingredient to what I do. And it's not overly sweet. Mm-hmm. I don't, saturate it with it. What you have in your hand is one of our toppers, essentially crumbled baklava with extra of that syrup. So,
so
I like
eat
to put
it with a spoon.
Oh my God.
You can eat it with a spoon.
Rosemary dark cocoa walnut.
Yep. That's a rosemary dark cocoa
that
walnut.
That's fabulous.
It's really delicious on strained yogurt.
Is it good for your colon? That's what
we
have to know that.
Everything's plant based, so I guess so,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah, right. Okay, but now let's ask a question. So, most baking, especially pastry, is done with butter, lots and lots of butter.
Yep.
But you are using olive oil?
I use olive oil. And really, it has nothing to do with any, caloric reason or when I started playing around with all the different ingredients, the butter was really taking over. Mm-hmm. And everything was butter, rosemary, baklava, or butter. The butter was really shining through. It was just so heavy. And so when I started playing around with the olive oil, It just made a world of difference. It just allowed, the cayenne pepper to show up.
Now,
and some
had
other...
Had you seen that before? Because I don't feel like I've ever had baklava made with olive oil.
I thought that it was something, not that I made up, but I thought it was something, that was just working for me. And then as I started, just talking with more people, they all said back in the day, that's what it was made with. So I don't know how far back, but it does make sense.
I mean, it does make sense. Right.
Right. So
they have
really,
olive oil in Greece?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
But yeah, so I use
For
a Greek
second,
olive oil.
I thought
oil.
You were serious. I was like, what?
Yeah. Easy Greek
because,
olive oil.
Yeah,
is
pardon
that
me.
Seriously?
Because we've been married for 17 years, and somewhere along the line, you started thinking I was stupid. Which I'm not. All right. So, anyways,
it's
yes,
the
they have olive oil in
thinking
Greece.
That would be wrong in that sense. That's all.
Beware, all ye newlyweds.
Yes. Okay. Anyway, all right. Well, where can people find you, just quickly? Because
so farmers markets for sure. Beginning next month, through the end of the year, online baklavacouture.com.
Okay, great.
Facebook, Twitter, we're there too.
Great.
We love to hear what you have to say.
Well, everything was delicious.
I'll tell you what
thank
I have
you
to say.
So much.
Leave
for coming
the box.
In.
That's what I have to say.
It's all yours.
It was delicious.
It is delicious.
All right, so Yvonne, come on back. We've got about 2 minutes.
Well, Milton, are you pouring one last thing?
Oh, that's about it for right now.
All right,
Saturday,
cool. Well,
one.
I want to talk about, again, you're the only Serbian restaurant in Washington, correct?
Correct.
Correct.
So, for people that, Barracks Row is still, undiscovered by a lot of folks outside of the district because they, that's only recently, I say the last couple of years, become someplace that, lots of restaurants and lots of, great bars and all of that. Belga cafes over there. There are a lot of great places over there. So if I come in there and it's my first time in a Serbian restaurant, what do you tell me to order? What do I want to eat?
I would definitely suggest to start with Balkan salad and
which
to
is
try
what? Balkan salad.
Balkan salad will be fresh onions, peppers, bell peppers. Mm-hmm. Then we have tomato, cucumber, and we have a Serbian or Bulgarian cheese.
It's like an Israeli salad, but it's the Balkan salad. It's very good.
With vinaigrette.
It's very tasty.
Balsamic vinaigrette.
It's funny, you don't look Jewish.
Just speak like that. And also, you should definitely try cevapi, or we call it on the